This time on Weather Brains, we talk tropical by looking at what's happening in the Atlantic.
I think the tropics are about to bust loose here.
Part two of our special series, looking into hurricanes.
The goal of the experiment is to monitor African tropical waves moving off the coast of Africa and monitoring the change as they move out over the warm waters of the Atlantic Ocean.
Also, the dilemmas of forecasting severe weather. James, what's the most concerned, the most worried you've ever been on the air about severe weather? And frustrations about news media coverage of weather.
I think all this hyperbole has just gotten out of hand. Every time it gets hot, you know, now it's a killer heat wave.
Plus, the effects of global warming, perhaps, right in our own backyards.
I got stung by some yellow jackets while I was cutting the grass Sunday. So
it's global warming.
Global warming, yeah.
James Spann looks at some of the effects of global warming.
Polar bears aggressive, polar bears cannibalistic, polar bears drowning, polar bears starving.
Bill Murray discovers the cause of a computer failure.
The entire interior of the computer was completely full of sand.
Oh, man. That and more coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the weather podcast 4 out of 5 scientists agree is a direct cause of global warming. I'm David Black with the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama, saying hello and thank you for joining us. Hello to ABC 3340 lead meteorologist James Spann. Hello, Mr. Spann. How are you?
David, I'm always thrilled and delighted to be on this program.
And it is a thrill and a delight to always have your presence, and that's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing, too, to have Bill Murray with us tonight and J.B. Elliott. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I am great, David. How are you?
Doing fine. You have some unusual news. You're not on the road this time. What's the deal with that?
I'm so happy to be sitting in my big leather chair watching the Braves play baseball and talking on Weather Brains.
Cool. J.B. Elliott, what are you up to, sir?
I'm not watching the Braves, but I'm enjoying being here.
You're not sneaking any illegal donuts or anything, are you?
Negative. Not a one. Haven't had one since Christmas.
Sounds like everybody's hopefully happy and healthy then, and enduring summertime weather. Speaking of which, James, any changes? Same old thing still?
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about, well, actually, you know, the tropics are about to start cranking up, I think. We're about to get into the phase where things are going to get interesting here. But I was reading the list of things caused by global warming. In fact, I bumped this up on our website, weatherparty.com. Somebody posted this a while back, but I bumped it up because it's so funny. It's got about 200 things here caused by global warming, according to the media. And some of my favorites are hemorrhoids is one of them.
That's a pain. Whatever, Ryan.
Yeah. And then I love the polar bear series. Polar bears aggressive, polar bears cannibalistic, polar bears drowning, polar bears starving, polar tours scrapped. It goes on and on here. Rioting and nuclear war, I think that's a good one. But go to weatherparty.com, and you might have to scroll down by the time you listen to the show here, but you'll see it. It's caused a complete list of things caused by global warming.
7-day itch?
It's probably on there. I mean, Jay, if hemorrhoids is on the list, I'm sure that's on there, too.
Yeah, and I got stung by some yellow jackets while I was cutting the grass Sunday. So
it's global warming.
Global warming, yeah.
That could be a connection.
I think we all get tired, for those of us that work in the deep south, and even, quite frankly, in Arizona. You know, I do the weather in Arizona, and they're in the monsoon season, David, so it's the same thing out there. You know, we talk about scattered afternoon and evening thunderstorms, and after a while, you just get tired of saying that. So I'm looking forward to a break in this, and I think the tropics are about to bust loose here. You know, a lot of people are calling this thing a bust.
Exactly.
Very dangerous. You can call it a bust at the end of November, but don't call it a bust in early August, because you'll get burned by doing that, I'm afraid. And it looks like this system east of Florida is going to do something. I have this funny fear this is going to be one of these that might bewilder those of us in the weather business for a while. The steering currents have totally collapsed out there, so it might just sit there for a while. And only J.B. Elliott knows where that thing is going. And he is going to reveal on this very program where it's going.
Can you give us a very specific landfall coordinate too, JB, as well as maximum sustained winds?
Maximum sustained winds, 75.
Y'all heard it here.
Now, is that the time of landfall?
Yes.
I made JB drop his iced tea on that one. Now, where is it going in, JB? Now, for those of you that are just dialing in here. At the time we're doing this podcast, we've just got a low pressure center, no tropical depression. It's east of Fort Lauderdale. So where's it going, JB?
Maybe Daytona Beach and come across the northern part of the Florida Peninsula and get out into the Gulf at Cedar Key, or a little north of Cedar Key, and then mosey on across toward Orange Beach and Gulf Shores and Dauphin Island.
I've never seen a system mosey. That would be interesting.
Yeah, they mosey sometimes.
Do you publish your own cone of landfall coordinates, JB? And if so, is that available anywhere, or would that be part of your forthcoming book, Scatterbrains and Scattered Showers?
It's classified right now.
I see. Okay. Bill Murray, you want to kick in anything on the tropical?
You realize JB has just caused the plywood stock to go way up down in South Alabama here. He set the southern end of the state into a panic now.
Home Depot is going to be sending you an appreciation letter any day now, JB.
Yeah, I've got a rumor that they're going to start contra flow on the interstate here very shortly. So, yeah, JB started something. Well, I think it's amazing to look on Weather Party, because, James, that's a great thing that you started there. And there's some cool video on there that was shot from the Beau Rivage during Hurricane Katrina. And I think if you really want to, you know, see storm surge and then also see the combination of the wind and the surge working together, I don't think I've ever seen a better video that shows it. And when we were on the Mississippi coast that Sunday morning, thinking that we might be spending the night there before landfall, the Beau Rivage parking lot was the place that I wanted to be. And so that guy who got in there, and I don't know how he did it, because they told us we were insane and told us that they were not going to let us go up there. That was the place to be during Hurricane Katrina, as far as I can tell.
Well, let me ask you something, Bill. It's kind of off the subject a little bit, but you've had some exciting computer news to tell us about. You finally got some technical problems taken care of, and I wanted to ask you about this on the show because a lot of people have mysteries involving computers and internet connections these days.
Well, my computer troubles go back to Hurricane Katrina, because that when we were on the Gulf Coast, we worked for like 40 straight hours, and I did our weather forecast package on Monday night and crashed after being awake for 40 straight hours, and the computer never turned on again. I turned it off that Monday night, and it never came back on. It was a Dell laptop. And got back to Birmingham. Thing was under warranty, and the service people came and opened it up and came and got me in my office. And they said, Mr. Murray, we found your problem. I said, what was it? And they turned it upside down. It was full of sand. The entire interior of the computer was completely full of sand.
Oh,
it had apparently been ingested by the fan every time someone would open the door to the van. You know, because it never left the van the entire time we were there. And so that killed that computer. I had to go and buy a Sony Vaio immediately the very next night. And that computer was a great computer, except that it just, you know, had this problem where it would, you know, drop the internet connection periodically. So it died last week, fortunately not because of a hurricane, but when I got this new computer, it turned out that it wasn't my internet connections that were the problem. And afterward, we had maligned the local cable system many, many nights. I think we proved that it was not their fault. It was more Sony's fault.
Sometimes that stuff is just hard to track down. And, of course, James, you and Brian Peters are now Mac people. Are you enjoying your, is it a MacBook Pro?
We actually have the same laptop. You know, Peters got one, and I got so jealous, I went and got one about 2 months later. But, yeah, it's a MacBook Pro, so we have dumped Windows completely and gone with the Apple OS X operating system. So, and, you know, I'm not going to be one of these bash Windows guys. I realize the world runs on it. But, you know, we talked about this in the show last week. I have no time, I mean no time, to fiddle with computer problems. And I've got to have something that works all the time, works in a hurry. And this system was the best solution for me. I do not regret it, and I absolutely have fallen in love with it.
But I will give you some advice, and that would be a suggestion not to allow sand from hurricanes to become ingested in same.
I will make a note of that. I'll put a little sticky note on this thing, not to get sand in here.
Well, speaking of hurricanes, a group of researchers, including a scientist from right here in Alabama, is about to kick off a month-long tropical research project. And this sounds really interesting. It's a $4.5 million project designed to learn more about what makes some hurricanes stay weak and others grow much stronger. The scientists are heading to where Atlantic hurricanes typically get their start, the Cape Verde Islands in the far eastern Atlantic. In the second of our special two-part series here on Weather Brains, looking into hurricanes, we're going to talk again with Robbie Hood, an atmospheric scientist with NASA in Huntsville. She's part of the Cape Verde mission.
What is its name and what's the purpose?
The name of the mission is NAMA, which stands for NASA African Monsoon Multidisciplinary Analyses. And it's an international partnership between other scientists from other countries and with NOAA here in the United States. And the goal of the experiment is to monitor African thunderstorms or convection, you know, tropical waves moving off the coast of Africa and monitoring the change as they move out over the warm waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Right now, several of the storms that do impact the United States as hurricanes actually get their start in the Cape Verde region. But we've noticed that maybe only one in ten of these African waves that come across the ocean develop into a tropical cyclone. So we'd like to understand more.
You would actually fly into these waves?
Yeah, actually this experiment will be flying the DC-8 at 45,000 feet, and so we'll be skimming along the tops of these storms, and we'll also be doing some stair stepping through the storm at different altitudes. The goal is to measure the microphysics and the aerosols within the storms to see if there are any inherent differences in the storms themselves before they start that march across the Atlantic Ocean. And, you know, our goal would be to try to capture some that develop into tropical cyclones and some that don't, and then to see if there's any differences when they first got started. You know, when they were at Cape Verde, was there anything different in them, in their character, before that made that march across the ocean that made one spin up and one not?
Will this be the first time that you'll really be able to sample those systems that early in their genesis? Because I'm assuming that you've typically just had to look at them off satellite when they'd be over in the Cape Verde Islands.
Right, yeah. For this region of the world, yes. Last year we tried to do a similar experiment in Costa Rica and sample Eastern Pacific tropical cyclones. But as it happened, nature didn't give us what we were supposed to get, and we ended up sampling, you know, more mature systems in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea. But we did last summer. We did catch some spin ups. Of something from a tropical depression all the way up to hurricane status. So we consider that experiment very successful. This time out, we'd also like to see, are the geographic differences between, say, you know, something that spins up in the Gulf of Mexico and something that spins up in the Cape Verde region.
NAMA,
geographically, are there differences?
NAMA starts in August and lasts
August 15th, yeah. Another key aspect of the experiment, too, is monitoring the Saharan air layer, which is a blast of hot, dusty air that blows, that moves from the continent of Africa out over the ocean, and it happens like 3 to 4 times a month. And there is a theory that the African air layer can also affect hurricane activity. The hypothesis goes either way, is depending on who you're talking to on that day. Most people think it suppresses hurricane activity because the air's drier and it's just doesn't have as much moisture in it. But also the fact that the dust may help with generating particles that rain droplets can form around. So being able to monitor that activity is another big part of the experiment.
How long will NAMA last?
It'll last a month. It's going from August 15th through September 15th.
Now, I don't think there's a whole array of hotels to stay in around the Cape Verde Islands, are there?
Yeah. Actually, the Cape Verdes it's a very small string of islands.
So what are you doing for lodging?
It's actually the Cape Verde Islands are considered a tourist location for Europe. So there are hotels there. So
I see where this is going now. Research in an exotic Atlantic island.
Well, you know, that people tease me about that all the time. We study tropical weather, and so you have to go to the tropics to study the weather, you know, you're sampling. But normally when we're there, we are so busy working that even if you're in the nicest resort, you don't have much time to enjoy it at all because you're just basically going there to sleep and getting up and going back out the next day. This coming summer, this will be the fourth field campaign that NASA's done to study a hurricane since 1998. The first two, we based our aircraft in the United States, and we were studying more mature storms and the landfalling impacts. Then as we sorted through the information we had, we started realizing the next lessons that we needed to learn were how storms were generated, you know, how they actually got started. So we planned the experiment in Costa Rica, and now we're going to be doing this one in the Cape Verde. But then our goal then is we've got several goals. One is, you know, what we do at NASA is developing satellite remote sensing technology to measure, you know, to help monitor the whole Earth observing system. So one of our goals is to, you know, to test out our technology and to monitor how our satellites are doing, so that we can learn, you know, the better ways to use the satellites and to develop new satellites in the future. Another part of the experiment will be monitoring things with the satellite and the aircraft and try to develop better computer simulations, because then that way we can learn how to incorporate satellite data into the models, and then the models can be test runs for what a future forecasting model should be.
You were living in Mississippi in 1969 when Hurricane Camille hit.
Uh-huh.
Did that have an influence on your decision to make meteorology your career?
Yeah, it did. It did. Although I was also, part of my life, my childhood, I also lived in Neosho, Missouri. We had a big thunder, big tornado come through town in 78 as well. So just from where I've lived, I've become interested in weather phenomena. But yeah, I was very impressed with the impact that Hurricane Camille had on the Gulf Coast region, you know, back in the 60s. And then, of course, you know, the impact of Hurricane Katrina last summer is even greater from, you know, the destruction that befell the area. So, yes, weather in general is very interesting to me, because it's something that impacts all of our society and can really, you know, affect our economy and everything else. So it's a huge impact on what we do every day.
When I hear about you researching the microphysical structure of these young developing systems, it just reminds me yet again about how little we really know about tropical systems.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, they happen out over the ocean, and those are places that are hard to reach. I mean, I personally think part of the future where we're really going to make great strides in understanding and technology is when we can start sending robotic aircraft through these storms, and robotic aircraft that can stay up, say, for 24 to 48 hours, that can stay with the storm for a long period. Right now, we're using predominantly manned aircraft, and when you have people flying the aircraft, you have a limit as to how long you can stay out, because people just get tired and they have to come home at a certain point.
Are we getting close to robotic research capability?
Yeah, I think we are. I think, you know, there, many of us in the scientific community are definitely interested in exploring those avenues, and NASA is interested in that being, as you know, part of an Earth observing system.
Good luck on the NAMA mission.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for talking with us, and I hope we'll get to chat with you again sometime. You do some fascinating work.
Anytime. It was very fun talking with you. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
NAMA will make heavy use of NASA's fleet of satellites, which promise to provide unprecedented views into the vertical structure of tropical systems. You know, I think one of the cool things, guys, out of talking with people like Robbie Hood is we're actually seeing an integration of all this technology. It's kind of beginning to come together. We can pull more data now from the satellites that she's talking about, and who knows what kind of technology, what kind of research we're going to have in the years ahead to figure these systems out.
I've often wondered how much the airborne African dust figures into these systems.
Well, most people think that they do inhibit hurricanes, as she said. Is that correct? I've been interested in that myself.
I think it's been a factor this year, David. You look at a lot of these waves that have come across the Hurricane Alley down there, and those things have been eaten up, I think, in part due to the Sahara dust layer. Hmm. And I agree with JB. I think it plays a bigger role than some people imagine.
I'm sure it does.
I wonder how long it's going to be, how many years, before we can really understand more about how hurricanes form, if they're going to become strong, and what their likely track and evolutionary cycle is going to be like. Is that just too much? Is that too ambitious to think that we would be able to know that much about them?
I think it'll improve every year, but I believe it'll be a long way off before we can really, really pin it down.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We were joking about it earlier, but that system off the Florida coast, David, you look at the model tracks on that, it's just bewildering. It's a spaghetti plot, and it's an ugly spaghetti plot. It's like you dumped out a big old bowl of it on the kitchen floor, and it's baffling. And hopefully, thanks to research like we're hearing about and improved data, and improve modeling, the next generation will be able to handle maybe a system like that days in advance, where we can just have to sit back and wait and watch for a while.
And I would suppose it's going to be a challenge not only to learn more about how the storms form and what they're going to do, but really how then to integrate that behavior into modeling, right? I mean, wouldn't that be a big challenge? How do you modify a model to make it accurately know these things? I don't know the answer to that, but yeah, that's fascinating science.
Two ways of improving hurricane forecasting. Number one is improving the physics behind the modeling, as we're talking about with this research. And number two is getting better data. And that's another big problem, because over this vast Atlantic basin, there's very little input. You don't have, you know, upper air balloons going up with radio sons for upper air data. The data is just sparse out there. And I think that's a huge thing that holds back the research community and better modeling, is the lack of data.
I only glanced at the model spaghetti earlier, but from memory, I believe one of the models carried it down across central Cuba, didn't it?
JB, that was the extrapolation. That's what that extrap line is. That just carries the system on its current motion. Apparently, it's drifting to the south-southwest, so that's the extrapolated motion. The models, you got one taking it as far south as Miami, and then one loops it without it moving inland, and it's got it east of Charleston. And then you got some that take it to literally where JB said, to Mobile Bay, and cutting across the along Interstate 10. So it's a bizarre problem, and hopefully, David, all this research will help in years to come.
I guess.
Yeah, I just now pulled it up again. I see what you mean now.
As great as the models are sometimes, when you see all these different scenarios and possible tracks for one storm, it's a reminder yet again that they don't really have a good handle on what's going to happen. We're just not there yet with technology.
Right. And we're a lot better than we used to be, but there's a long way to go. And you look at Rita last year, you know, as I recall, sometimes I get my names wrong here. That was the big one that came up towards southeastern Texas, and they evacuated Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back on that spaghetti plot, and out of the 16 models on the plot, you had 13 of the 16 pointing it right at Galveston and Houston. One moved it up toward, you know, Lake Charles and, you know, southwest Louisiana, and that was the right one, but nobody really jumped on it.
You don't know.
No, and that's why, as you've heard it preached here by many people, including, you know, Bill Murray and Max Mayfield and everybody else likes the tropics, you can't concentrate on that dead center line. You got to realize there's a lot of uncertainty, and that's a key word in hurricane forecasting. So,
well, speaking of uncertainty, I want to jump to a listener's email, because that kind of ties into what we're talking about. Michael Haynes wrote to us. And in his email, he says, quote, "I emailed you about 4 months ago asking you about my options for going back to college to study meteorology. At the time, it seemed highly unlikely that I would due to my job and various other commitments and obligations. You basically told me that if it is in God's will for me to be a meteorologist, then he will make it happen. Well, I am so very happy to tell you that it apparently is in his will, because I am about to start my first semester as a full-time student on campus at Mississippi State. It certainly is a miracle, and I give all the glory to God. Onto my WeatherBrains question. This is aimed to those of us who are either meteorologists or plan to be. I, like many other students and meteorologists, have a good intuition, instinct, or gut feeling, as I have heard you refer to it, about what will transpire during severe weather events and really weather in general. However, I am certainly not perfect, and I have been wrong many times. When you are on the air and people are relying on you for accurate and possibly life-saving information, how do you deal with your intuition when it conflicts with what the computer models are telling you and conflicts with the rest of the media, other news stations? My second question is along the same lines. As excited as I am about being in school, I am concerned that I will learn to rely on the facts rather than my instincts, intuition, which I believe are God-given. How do you balance out the two and keep yourself from relying too much on the facts or too much on intuition?" James?
That's a great email. We get copies of all the listener emails, and first off, congratulations. That's great. I mean, this guy's in meteorology now at Mississippi State, and he's on the path, and I think that's too cool when you got a passion for this science. You know, so many people never act on it. They just have regrets later in life, but I think that's cool that he's getting a chance to go for it. When it comes to this gut feeling thing, let me just say this. There is a fine line between faith and foolishness, and that goes for anything. Anybody that's a believer, And you got to be real careful when you're walking that line between being somebody of faith and being in the spiritual sense and trying to communicate what you're being told by God and using science and facts. It is a very fine line. And I will say this, I don't think they always conflict. A lot of times the gut feeling, the internal knowledge that you think you have acquired goes right along with science. There's not always a conflict there, so I don't think it's going to be as hard as he thinks it is. Sometimes that gut feeling, that little notion in your spirit confirms what the science that you've already seen. So I don't think it'll be the big conflict like he's afraid of there. Would you agree, JB?
Yes, definitely.
James, what's the most concerned, the most worried you've ever been on the air about severe weather?
I think there's no doubt it was this tornado in Tuscaloosa, December the 16th, 2000, because we were showing it live on the tower camera, and it was obvious it was a large tornado, and it was obvious it was coming through a populated part of town, and you just knew there inevitably would be some loss of life down there, and I think that was probably the most intense time I've ever been on television. But then again, it was the easiest time when it comes to a question like that. There's no doubt about it. You don't have to worry about if it, is it there, is it not there. The whole world is watching it live on television. So that was not difficult. Probably for me, you know, the hardest ones are when you've got like an April 8th, 1998. You know, you get word in your ear that Oak Grove High School's been taken out there on Lock 17 Road, and you're showing a hook echo on radar, and how many hook echoes do we have that don't produce tornadoes? And, you know, trying to convince people that there's something there, you know, that was tough. And I will say today, David, it's going to be even tougher because we have a very high false alarm ratio we're working with. And, again, that's I'm not faulting anybody with the weather service on that, but that's just the way it is. And as a weather community, we've got to work on improving that.
Does it worry you that it does it worry you that it damages your credibility?
Oh, yeah. I think all this hyperbole has just gotten out of hand. Every time it gets hot, you know, now it's a killer heat wave. Every time there's a thunderstorm out there, it's a death-producing storm. And we've got to be very careful when we use all of this language like that when it's really dangerous. And I'm really trying to watch that and work with others on that. And we'll see if we can get that under control. Because my fear, when we have another April 8th and it's a radar-indicated tornado and it's not on a tower cam or a sky cam, nobody's going to, you know, listen to a word we say.
How does it make you feel if you get a listener's email telling you that you saved their lives?
Well, I don't save anybody's life. I have such a tiny part in that process. That's
but you've had people say that to you.
Well, yeah, I have, and I'd be sure. The first thing I'll do is point out, look, that's a God thing. That's not a James thing. I might be some little tiny trinket of this process, but you thank him and not me. But I am afraid we're going to have big loss of life next time one blows in here. I got a chance to speak with the Alert folks. David, you're familiar with that organization.
Absolutely.
The amateur radio operators. And I talked with them about this last Tuesday night, about we've got to improve this false alarm ratio. And the only way to do that is with eyeballs, trained eyeballs, and with sky cams everywhere looking at this stuff. So, you know, we can cut back on these warnings. And I sure hope that my emphasis in the next couple of years on getting train spotters out and the Skywatcher network and the Skycam, that's my whole reason for doing all of this, is to cut back on these false warnings, because I just think we're in real trouble with all of this hyperbole and, you know, sensationalism that's going with the weather. And maybe I'm just getting old or something, but I think we have way too many warnings.
Glad you talked to Alert. They're a good group. Alert-alabama.org. One other email that I wanted to pass along from Marion County, Alabama, EMA Director Matt McCracken. Quote, well, I guess this makes me an official weather weenie. I have not missed a single Weather Brains. The most challenging was my week-long vacation to the Gulf Coast when it took me 3.5 hours to download at dial-up speeds. So there you are.
That is a fan, Matt. You're wow. We ought to send Matt a weather brain something here. We need some souvenirs. We need some prizes to give away here.
Bill Murray, what about a bobbleheaded doll?
I think a James fan bobblehead would be a great thing.
I think a week stay at one of Murray's hotel suites or something there, you know?
That's That could be arranged.
We'll have to do a little drawing here or something. But
he's the only member of this group that's actually got some, you know, serious business going on here. So.
And you do. I'm surprised again that you're talking to us from Birmingham, or I guess Trustville, Alabama, this time, Bill, instead of Salt Lake City or Vegas or wherever you might wind up.
Yeah,
you wind up everywhere.
This time tomorrow night, I'll be on an airliner flying to Vegas. So.
Hey, tell us about the air travel now with all these new restrictions. Mm-hmm. How hard is that?
You know, I haven't flown since the latest terrorist threat.
You can't even take a bottle of water on the airplane anymore?
I don't think so. I think they're very limited to medicines and a few other little things that you can carry. So it should really radically change the check-in process, I imagine. I'm going to find out about it tomorrow. We're planning on being there, you know, a good 2 hours in advance tomorrow just to make sure we make that flight.
Not even a Buffalo Rock, so I'm not going to fly.
Man, yeah, I have this picture of JB, you know, the TSA guys are holding him down with handcuffs as JB's trying to get his Buffalo Rock on that airplane.
Oh, boy.
Not a pretty
I've been trying to talk Bill into interceding and buy Parisian.
We need to hurry and do something. Yeah, that's a good idea, Jay.
Let's talk about the heat wave just a minute before we go, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The heat wave that we've been having here in Alabama this summer, I do not think it ranks among the great heat waves of all time by any means. It's just the persistence thereof.
Well, wait a minute. Are you disputing that this is not global warming at work? Is that what this is about, JB?
Yes.
Okay.
I just don't think it's, you know, we've had heat waves in the past to where we would have 100 plus temperatures, 105 and 106 for a week at a time. And each time we've approached the 100 degree mark this summer, it only was for one day, maybe two, and even then only barely reaching 100. So I do not think that this heat wave in Alabama, at least this summer, has been critical or crucial. It's bad enough, yes, no doubt about that, but I don't think we've had a large number of deaths.
But from a meteorological perspective, it's really not that out of line or that unusual, then, is it?
No, 1980, 1952, and some of those were worse, 1925 especially.
I tell you, the 1930s were hot as a firecracker. You know, you look at those numbers back there, David, and you know, 1925, that was the state's hottest temperature ever, down in Centerville, 112 degrees. You know, where were these TV people saying this is some death-producing heat wave? It was just hot. It's hot in the summer in Alabama, and it's not some kind of, you know, like JB says, if you want to see a real summer that is extremely dangerous, the last one we had that was really dangerous that killed a whole lot of people here was in 1980. You go back and study that, and that was a dangerous summer.
So when we look back at 2006 in a couple of years or 5 years, it's really going to be a very unremarkable year as far as heat. Nobody's going to think back to, wow, what a hot year 2006 was.
Persistently,
how many records
it was hot,
have we set? I don't think we've set many records at all, have we?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. The hottest temperature I've noticed here in town, I believe, was 101, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, based on the day at the Birmingham airport, yeah.
Yeah. And that 1925 heat wave, of course, there was not a bit of air conditioning. So can you imagine going through all that? It was persistent, too. It happened in the first of the month and came back strong later in the month and even extended into the next month a little bit. And then 2 years later, 1927, it was blistering hot again with a lot of days over 100. And before we go, I want to ask Mr. Murray, where does he think this new system, this new tropical system, is going to make landfall?
You know, JB, I haven't had much time today to really pay attention to what the possibilities are, but it looks like, you know, potentially is going to menace the east coast of Florida. We've got a hotel in Fort Lauderdale, so it'll probably go right over it, unfortunately, after $1.8 million last year from Hurricane Wilma.
And Mr. Spann, we need your forecast.
Well, since you've already called Orange Beach, JB, wow, you know, we can't do anything to conflict you. I think it gets close to Jacksonville, and if you look at the 18Z modeling from today, and we're doing this on the 14th of August, it's got it kind of just drifting up toward Jacksonville, and some of the models loop it out there in the Atlantic, and then some move it along Interstate 10 to the west. I'm not convinced that I-10 thing is correct. I don't think it goes anywhere in a hurry. I think it's going to be a nightmare I don't think it'll be a dangerous hurricane, but it's going to be an issue for forecasters from Miami to Melbourne to Jacksonville to Charleston for days. This is not a short-term issue. because of the lack of steering currents out there. I don't, my gut feeling, it doesn't get as far west as Alabama, but I think it could bother Daytona, Jacksonville, Savannah, and Charleston.
So do we need to have a tropical prediction contest, the prize of which would be a stay at one of Bill Murray's properties? Is that what we need to consider?
We ought to have the viewers send an email, and if they submit it, you know, they got to submit it by a certain time because, you know, you can't wait until it's over to tell us where it's going. But I think the first thing we have to do is get this thing on the board. It's not on the board yet. As we're doing this, it's just a broad low out there. But I think once it gets to be a depression, people ought to send us an email. Tell us the intensity and the landfall point. Let's see if we can get us a winner.
Maybe a Bill Murray bobble-headed doll would be a good additional prize, too. Just a thought. Or a J.B. Elliott doll.
I can't imagine that. That would be scary. I wouldn't even look at it.
Maybe all three. All three of you guys.
And a pack of Buffalo Rock and Pop-Tarts.
Yes.
J.B. Elliott food. Survival food.
I'll go for that. And one other thing. I'm talking too much, but I wish we could interview Matt McCracken one time. He has a long history in EMA work. He could tell us a lot of good stories.
Well, he might not talk to us after this show. You never know.
No, it's history.
He may have higher standards than us Weather Brains guys.
And I hope the listeners realize that we were just sort of speculating on the landfall of this new system that is just really purely speculative right now.
Well, we do put out the disclaimer that we're all a bunch of weather geeks. And a reminder, too, that not only are we weather geeks, but all the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are those of the speaker and not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you would like to contact us, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. Our phone number, if you'd like to leave a voicemail, is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482.
I'm glad we got that disclaimer in so nobody will sue us here.
It's a suing society.
Yeah.
So sue me.
Chop suey.
On behalf of Bill Murray, J.B. Elliott, and James Spann, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening, and we hope that you will be able to join us again for the next edition of Weather Brains, if you want to take that chance. Weather Brains is copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. All right, guys, every one of y'all were totally twisted. Thank you.
All right, boys, yes. Thank y'all. Bye-bye.
Adios. Bye.